There's one place that's very famous during Govardhan Parikrama. You'll alert me when we get there. The place where it is said, if you roll in the ground in the dust of Vrindavan at that particular place, that is sufficient purification that you will go back to Godhead after this lifetime. So, Krishna Balaram Das is going to make sure that we find that place when we do our Govardhan Parikrama. And we can all roll in the dust of Vrindavan. So we've been dancing in the dust of Vrindavan and sitting in the dust of Vrindavan and breathing the dust of Vrindavan. I remember one visit to Vrindavan. There was a lot of walking. Deliberately, we don't have, except for Govardhan Parikrama, deliberately there's not a lot of walking because we have some older people and so on. But we did one year a lot of walking, and I had a very strong realization, appreciation and realization that the dust of Vrindavan is purifying. I felt like I wish I could take a bath but not wash my feet. Because it's just the feeling of spiritual surcharge just from being in contact with the dust of Vrindavan. It's not ordinary. The place is not ordinary. The external appearance of things is ordinary, but the spiritual substance is not ordinary. Before I forget, I want to make some little announcement, and if you can all remind me, I'll make it again. Tomorrow morning, primarily because of the possibilities of getting or not getting darshan of the deities at Varsana, we must leave tomorrow morning sharp at 5:30. Tomorrow morning, I'll say it backwards, sharp at 5:30. Otherwise, if you're late, that's okay, we won't get darshan at the Varsana temple, the main Sriji Mandir temple. That's okay, be late, and we won't get darshan. But if you want to get darshan, please be on time. 5:30 tomorrow morning. What time tomorrow morning? 5:30 tomorrow morning. Okay. There's a number of very nice things that are in natural sequence to happen before that. And if we do it on time, we'll have darshan. And if not, we won't. And they're not flexible. Usually. So this is our afternoon, final afternoon in Gokul. The whole area, particularly where Krishna grew up as a small child in Mahavan. That area is called Mahavan, one of the principal forests of Vrindavan. And he remained in Mahavan for 3 years and 6 months. And that's when his parents decided, too many demons, too much trouble, let's go. So they moved to another area of Vrindavan for 3 years, 6 months. What's that area called? Anyway, they remained there for some time, and then again they went back to Nandagram, where Krishna then remained until 12 years, and then he left Vrindavan. So this is, we're going to describe some pastimes, starting with Krishna's appearance pastime and some of his childhood pastimes, and we'll see how long it takes for the sun to set. Because we don't want to get back too late. And we have to have our translation also. We'll go back, piecing together some of the statements found not only in Srimad Bhagavatam, but in other of the Puranas and Vaishnava literature that describe Krishna and his pastimes. Going back a few generations, there was a king named Devamida. And Devamida had one son, the eldest son, whose name was Shurasena. And Shurasena had two wives. One of those wives was a Kshatriya wife, and from his Kshatriya wife he had one son, Vasudev. And from the Vaishya wife, he had one son whose name was Parjanya. That's a fitting name for a son whose duty it is to be in charge of the agriculture, because Parjanya indicates auspicious rainfall. We know from Bhagavad Gita that rain comes from yajna. So he was engaged in many yajnas, and much rain came, and bountiful supply. And he was given not only that service as a Vaishya, but he was entrusted by his father, Shurasena, with the title, the king of this area of land. Particularly Gokul, and for that matter, the whole of Braj. So the king of Braj became Brajendra. So that was his title. And Parjanya, in turn, had five sons. And they all had like-sounding names. The eldest son was Upananda. And the next son was Abhinanda. And the third son was Nanda. And the fourth son was Sunanda. And the fifth son was Nandana. And like their father, they were all very wonderful souls. But amongst them, Nanda was recognized by everyone, by his father, by the brothers, by all the residents of Braja, as the most outstanding in his wonderful qualities. So much so that when it was time for the father to turn over the kingdom to his eldest son, Upananda, at the very moment of the yajna, when Upananda was to be named the king of the cowherds, he turned to his brother, Nanda, and said, "And I hereby transfer everything to Nanda," with the explanation that he is the person who everyone has the greatest esteem, regard, and respect for. Everyone loves him like a father. Even I'm the elder brother. I love him like a father. He should be the king. I transfer whatever I'm inheriting from my father to my brother Nanda. And Nanda said, no, this isn't right. You're the elder brother, and I should serve you, and I want to serve you. Think about it, how many situations like that arise in the material world. The title of king is in a tussle between the one who is more humble and the other who is more humble. And neither of them is doing it to compete for humility. They genuinely feel. The other is the suitable person, not me. Finally, Upananda made the closing remark and said, even my name shows that Nanda should be king. My name is Upananda, and his name is Nanda. He's the king. So, Nanda finally consented, you are my superior, you are giving me this order, how can I decline your order? I accept on your behalf. So Nanda Maharaj became the king of Braj. Brajendra was his title. King of the cowherds. And he eventually married one very qualified wife, Yashoda. And her name was also suitable to her personality. Her character was whoever she was in the association with, that person received great fame and acclaim, just as her name indicates, Yashoda. And under the rule of Nanda and Yashoda, the residents of Vrindavan were very happy because of his, like his father, Parjanya, all of his auspicious qualities, his careful observance of all the standards of worship of the personality of Godhead, very compassionate, very caring personality, benevolent, merciful, perfectly religious, had the full trust and confidence of all of his subjects. Everything was very, very wonderful. Except one thing. There's always something.
He had no son.
In fact, he had no children. And it's one of the duties of the king that there should be a recipient of the throne following himself. The brahmanas had all their recipes, performed this yajna, performed that yajna, perform another yajna, combination of yajnas, and we'll do the trick for you, surely you'll have a son. He engaged them, but that's not where his faith was residing. He was a pure devotee of the Lord, and he felt simply by pleasing Lord Narayan, the personality of Godhead, everything will become very nice. Whatever is the Lord's plan will be best fulfilled by that method. So, something very similar to Ambarish Maharaj, who engaged in a year-long Ekadasi Vrata, Nanda and his wife engaged in a year-long Dwadasi Vrata. Doesn't describe the details of what that Vrata was made up of, but they very strictly observed it. And as the year was coming to a close, separately, both Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda were having the same dream, a recurring dream, again and again. A very beautiful small boy appeared in their dream again and again. And they shared this with one another. There's some indication. Something very auspicious surely must be going to happen by the plan of the Supreme Lord. Then they, one evening, both had the same dream in which Lord Narayan appeared and gave the same indication. Surely, you have pleased me very much by your vrata, very strictly followed, and the personality, by my arrangement, you will have a nice son. Around the same time, Now this is drawing from Rupa Goswami's writing. A very elderly Brahmani came to Vrindavan and came here to Gokul. She was of such a stature and nature that just to be in her presence, everyone could understand, here is a very elevated personality. They didn't know who she was a stranger to Braj. But immediately, just in her presence, what a wonderful Brahmani, how pure and elevated and saintly she is. Even before she spoke, that was Purnamasi. Rupa Goswami explains that Purnamasi is Yogamaya personified. Yogamaya, as we know, makes all arrangements for Krishna's pastimes. She coordinates and facilitates and arranges, and through her potency, Yogamaya potency, the wonderful pastimes of Krishna are enacted. So even before Krishna appeared, Purnamasi came. To Gokul Mahavan. And with her was one small Brahmin boy. Purnamasi is the mother of Sandipani Muni. And Madhu Mangal came with her. And the Vrijvasis just came and sat at her feet and wanted to hear whatever wisdom she was going to pass on to them. And she shared that, by my calculations, by my careful, as best as I can discern, very soon, Nanda and Jasoda will have a very wonderful child, a small boy, as their son. And everyone was very happy to hear this. Because this is the nature of loving exchange. It's absent envy in this material world. If someone is prospering, if someone is doing well, if someone has good fortune, people feel envious. And if someone has misfortune, they may feel a little sad, but they still, at the same time, some content, at least I don't have to go through that suffering, and so on. But the residents of Vrindavan were just the opposite. They had such genuine love for Nanda and Jasoda, that at the news that they would have a wonderful son, it was festival. Great, great joy spread throughout all of Gokul, knowing that very soon Nanda and Jasoda would have a son. The arrangement was made by Yogamaya herself, the Yogamaya potency, that she appeared within the womb of Mother Jasoda. And following her appearing in the womb of Mother Jasoda, a second child, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes. Twins. Krishna also appeared within the womb of Mother Yashoda. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Jamuna was Mathura, and the imprisonment of Vasudev and Devaki by Kamsa, rather than going through the whole set of pastimes of Kamsa being ready to kill his sister, even when Vasudev gave the best of all advice to Kamsa. Perfect philosophy. And Kamsa had an understanding of transcendental knowledge. He knew that what Vasudev was saying was true. Vasudev explained to Kamsa that the soul is the real self. And life as we know it is simply a transient phase of the soul, entering one body, exiting that body, leaving the body, entering into another body, and so on, life after life. So he advised Kamsa, the sinful reaction that will come to you for killing your own sister on her wedding day is not going to be good karma for your soul, Kamsa. But Kamsa couldn't hear good advice because he was such a demoniac person. The only thing he could understand finally was the diplomacy that Vasudeva offered. So when Vasudeva offered that any children born of Devaki, Devaki's not the one who's going to kill you, it's the eighth child of Devaki. I promise you, I will give every one of the children born of Devaki to you, and you may do with that child as you wish. I'm seeing the sun go down fast, so I'm going to skip some of the nice details, because you've heard some of them already, but how they all fit together is very, very nice. The first six sons of Devaki, representing the enemies of the conditioned soul, the impurities of the conditioned soul, Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, and Matsarja, they were being relieved from Devaki in order to prepare her to be the recipient of Krishna as her son. And Balaram appeared as the seventh son of Devaki, and by Krishna's arrangement was transferred to the womb of Rohini. Rohini was also one of the wives of Vasudeva. Rohini was also in Mathura for some time. It was in Mathura that she became pregnant by her husband, Vasudeva. And in her third month of pregnancy, Vasudeva requested Devaki to take shelter of his good friend Nanda Maharaj so that the child born of her would be safe. Because who knows what wicked Kamsa would do? He's such a terrible, unpredictably cruel personality. Or we could say predictably cruel personality. So she went to stay with Nanda. And Nanda treated Rohini just like his sister and the wife of his dear friend Vasudeva. Late in the pregnancy of Rohini, she had a dream. And in her dream, she had miscarriage. When she woke up from the dream, she realized that she had a miscarriage. But the personality of Godhead spoke to her and said, "Do not worry. A child has appeared in your womb in place of that child that you just had miscarriage. And by the Lord's arrangement, you will have a son. Do not worry." So by transcendental influence, Rohini became the mother of Balaram. Meanwhile, Krishna appeared as the eighth child of Devaki. But according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is very esoteric and detailed, but Mother Yashoda gave birth to twins. The first child that she gave birth to was a girl, Yogamaya, because Yogamaya was in her womb first. Yogamaya came out first, and second was Krishna. So when Vasudeva brought Krishna that he was carrying in his arms, merged with Krishna, who was by the side of Yashoda, And he took the female child. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in this way, and brought the child back into the prison house of Kamsa, per the arrangements of Krishna himself. So Vasudeva and Devaki knew that the child that Kamsa came into the prison house to kill was not their child. They both knew. And one might wonder, how could they allow Kamsa to try to kill someone else's child for the sake of saving their own child? But they were completely under the order of Krishna. It was Krishna's order to do what he had said to do. And so they simply were carrying out Krishna's order. And the personality who they brought back was the Yogamaya. And Krishna had told Yogamaya, don't worry, it's not possible to kill you. Kamsa will not be able to kill you. So there's no risk or harm for you. But Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. Now we should understand something, just like in speaking about the dust of Vrindavan. And no, it doesn't appear to be anything other than dust or sand. It doesn't appear to be like mystically spiritualizing or something like that. But contact with the dust of Vrindavan shows it to be true. And when the demigods had gone to the shore of the milk ocean to appeal to Krishna, to appeal to Lord Vishnu to appear, he promised them that he would appear. But when Lord Vishnu entered into the womb of Yashoda, he merged with the original personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, because Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of all expansions. Only a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna is Lord Vishnu, who resides in the ocean of milk. And that personality that appeared, descended as he promised he would descend, merged with the body of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He is Avatari, the source of all expansions and avatars. That's the personality that appeared as the son of Yashoda and Nanda. The birth of Krishna that took place in the prison house of Kamsa was at midnight. And the birth of Krishna that appeared as the son of Yashoda was also at midnight. Our acharyas describe that after giving birth to her first child, she fell fast asleep. Somehow mystically by Yogamaya's influence, she didn't even recognize the other child that was born, nor Nanda Maharaja's coming into the maternity room. But when the morning came, and Nanda Maharaj heard that Yashoda had given birth, they had waited so long, years and years and years of trying to please the personality of Godhead. And now all these omens indicating that a wonderful son would appear. Nanda Maharaj was so happy. He came literally running to the side of Yashoda, and when he saw the tiny form of Lord Krishna, his heart burst open with transcendental happiness to see this beautiful transcendental form, his newborn child. And Mother Yashoda carefully placed Krishna in his hands. And Nanda Maharaj was beaming radiantly and immediately declared, we should have a big festival. Nandotsava is how we celebrate that festival. So he arranged with the treasury of the King of Braj for a big festival all for the newborn child. So in a worldly sense, this is material. Persons spend all their wealth for such things. Marriages and births and parties and so many things. But this is the personality, this is the proper repose of one's riches and one's tendency to glorify another. Perfection of life for all the residents of Braj. And so they, as is their tradition, they brought so many gifts of ornaments and jewels and fine clothing and grains and so many nice things, auspicious items, all offered to the personality of Godhead Krishna. A grand Abhishek for Krishna, just as we have on our Krishna Janmashtami. And big festival, all arranged by Nanda Maharaj. Meanwhile, back in Mathura, Kamsa wasn't wasting time. It was confirmed by Durga, who when he tried to kill the eighth child of Devaki, slipped out of his hands, flew into the sky and ordered him, stop your heinous activities, the eighth child of Devaki, that your eternal enemy, the one who in your previous lifetime killed you when you were in the name of Kalanemi, he is now appeared in somewhere in the land and he will bring your destruction. So Kamsa called all of his buddies, the demons who, as we described earlier today, he had defeated or brought under his control by one means or another, and ordered them, you are to assist me in killing this appearance of Lord Vishnu in whatever the form. You are to find him and destroy him. And the first who he deployed? Putana. How old was Krishna when Putana came? 3 or 4 days old. You've seen a child that's newborn and 3 or 4 days old? How tiny. So tiny. But Putana was expert. Actually, Prabhupada describes her demoniac power was given special empowerment by Yoga Maya to find Krishna. Because how are you going to find a child that's born somewhere over there? She came right to the place. And she was very powerful. It didn't take her long at all because she was a witch. She knew how to travel on a broomstick. Just like in America, recently, the end of October, the last day of October is Halloween. The Pope came out with a statement saying, Halloween is anti-Christ. And good Catholics should have nothing to do with Halloween. And one of the emblems of Halloween is witches flying on broomsticks. Prabhupada described that when he was very young, it was a known fact, in certain northern parts of India, he didn't say where, there were witches that knew the art. They would break a limb from a tree and with black magic they could soar through the air. Just like they show in Halloween pictures. You know, there's the full moon and there's the witch riding your broomstick, cackling away with a big something on her broken nose, and funny shaped hat, and cackling away. Putana. But she not only had such mystic powers as flying through the air, or she could transform herself into other forms. She was a Rakshasi. Her delicacy, her delight was drinking blood of small children and then eating their bodies. Yummy. Krishna Chaitanya, you better watch out. Watch out for Putana. Krishna Kirtan, too. Watch out for Putana. She went zooming right to Nanda Maharaj's palace in Gokul, assumed such a beautiful form. The description of the form that she appeared is something that a brahmacharya sannyasi should not meditate upon. Such a beautiful form. In detail, Sukadeva Goswami, he describes her bodily features. And she was so beautiful that when she entered into the house of Nanda Maharaj, everyone felt, this must be the goddess of fortune who has come to bless our small child. And the arrangement is that in Vedic homes, the men would reside in the outer part of the house, and the women would reside in the inner part of the house, and a small child would be the inner part of the inner part of the house. She went walking right through everybody, right into the chamber where Krishna was. And when she saw the beauty of Krishna, she had this motherly appreciation of, what a beautiful child is this Krishna. But at the same time, her demoniac spirit was very strong. And the next thought was, I will kill him. She had a whole plan already prepared. She had smeared her breast with a very strong kind of poison, so much and so strong that many adult men would instantly die just from touch with this powerful poison. And she went right up to Krishna and picked up Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami describes that her beauty was such that she appeared to be like a very elegant jeweled sword inside a silk sheath. In other words, inside her beautiful form was the instrument of death. And she placed Krishna on her lap and embraced Krishna as she was getting ready to offer her breast to Krishna. The sun's going down quickly. I'll try to go quickly. Another metaphor that was used by Shukadeva Goswami is, it was like a person who places a terribly poisonous snake around their neck, thinking that the snake is a rope. And then the snake bites, and they're instantly dead. So Putana's move was like that. And then she offered her breast to Krishna. It's just a few days old. Little tiny baby. He closed his eyes. And our acharyas give different reasons why he closed his eyes. He closed his eyes. One reason they offer is because the first demon that Krishna had to kill was a woman. And scriptures enjoin that one is not to kill a woman. Just like Ramachandra, the first demon that he had to kill was a woman. So Krishna closed his eyes. Another explanation was, she's so sinful, Krishna didn't want to see her face, so he closed her eyes. Different explanations were given. But as Krishna accepted the breast milk, the breast of Putana, he simultaneously with his little tiny, think of how tiny a little several day old child's fingers are, he squeezed her breast with transcendental strength that it gave enormous pain to Putana. So much so she began to scream in pain. And he began to suck. And as he was sucking, he took the poison, which didn't affect his transcendental body at all. He also sucked from her body, from the maternal affection that she was feeling, some transcendental touch of Krishna, some milk, and then he began to suck out her life air. She screamed in pain and cried out, "Leave me, child! Please leave me!" And that just made Krishna squeeze harder and suck stronger. Krishna's withdrawing the whole cosmic manifestation just by his inhaling. The capacity is there. The Mahavishnu, by his inhale, he withdraws the whole universe, the whole creation. So as he was sucking on the breast of Putana, the pain of losing her life in that way was too much, and she got up screaming, ran from the room, ran from the house, ran out through the courtyard and into the pasture ground and into the forest, crying, screaming in pain. In time, the mystic power of Putana to disguise herself in this beautiful form was countered by Krishna's contact, and she assumed this giant, huge form. When she fell to the ground dead, all the trees in all directions scattered for 12 miles. Huge body. Acharyas describe one of the qualities of Krishna, we know this from Nectar Devotion, is he's expert. And one of the things that Krishna does is when he does one thing, simultaneously he does many things. He's not multitasking, he's simultaneously accomplishing many things. So one of the many things that he accomplished was the trees that he knocked over, that Putana knocked over, were the favorite pleasure garden of Kamsa. They were very special fruit trees that produced very nice fruits, and those fruits would be gathered to be offered to Kamsa. Putana knocked them all down, finished. No more fruits for Kamsa. Hearing this screaming sound of Putana, the Vrijbasis all came running from different directions, and when they saw this huge body, 12-mile long body, imagine. Think of what 12 miles is. Huge body. And it's very ugly. Her teeth were fangs. They're described by Shukadeva Goswami, they were like plows protruding from her mouth. Her big, giant abdomen was like a dried up leek. And her legs were like tree trunks. It's very fearful form. And they saw little Krishna playing up on top. Their thought was the safety of Krishna. Krishna, come on down. He was happy just playing. Finally, they went and rescued Krishna from the top of Putana and brought him to a place where they could make everything auspicious. Mother Jasoda brought the cow, everything from the cow. He was performed Abhishek with cow urine and the little soft hairs on the end of the cow tail moved quickly back and forth like a whisk to bring auspiciousness upon little Krishna. And his body was anointed on the 12 parts like we apply tilak with cow dung, and brought brahmanas to chant Vedic mantras to purify Krishna from any ill omens that may have caused this difficulty for him. Meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj had gone to Mathura to pay his taxes to Kamsa. And when he was, this is just some days after Krishna appeared, but it was that time of the year, the time of the year when the harvest had come from their crops. So he brought bullock carts of grains and milk products to offer as taxes to Kamsa. And when he was staying in Mathura, Vasudev, his dear friend, came to know, Nanda Maharaj has come to Mathura. So immediately he found out where Nanda Maharaj was staying, and he went to meet him, because for some short time, Vasudev was free to move about. So he went into the house where Nanda Maharaj is staying, and Nanda Maharaj immediately jumped up and ran and embraced Vasudev. Now, Vasudev knew that Nanda Maharaj didn't know what he knew, that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. He didn't want to disturb his devotion, his mood of love for Krishna. So he began praising that, you are so kind upon me, you're taking such nice care of my son, the son of Rohini, and now I understand that you too have a son, you and Yashoda. Such good fortune has come upon you. Please describe the beauty of your son. And Nanda Maharaj was happily describing. And Vasudev gave him this warning. He said, I have this feeling that there may be some danger for your son. I think you should go back to Vrindavan as quickly as possible. So hearing that from his dear and wise friend Vasudev, Nanda immediately went back. And as he was coming back along the road, he didn't see the road. He saw this giant, huge body. And he was thinking, how horrible. And he heard immediately what had happened, that Krishna was being attacked by this terrible demoness. And Nanda Maharaj was like a father feeling, what a bad thing I've done. I've left my child so newly born, and now he's been in difficulty, and he wasn't even there to protect him. He was blaming himself for the danger. But then immediately he understood, being the king of cowherds, what to do. Immediately the body of Putana should be burned, because the sense at the time was just like a poisonous snake. When a poisonous snake is killed, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described, everyone celebrates, the Bhagavatam says. But immediately the body of the snake is destroyed, because if the soul somehow manages to come back and activate again in that body the enviousness and venomousness of the serpent, will be many times more. So immediately the body should be destroyed. But this body of Putana was so huge, so they had to get chopping instruments and cut the body into pieces and put the pieces in a fire. And as they were putting the pieces into the fire, the fragrance wasn't like at a, whatever you call those places where you burn bodies. We passed one on the way just going over the Jamuna. What do you call that? Crematorium. Bad smell. This was the most fragrant smell involved in deity worship, because the touch of Krishna had been upon the body of Putana, a guru fragrance. So Putana's body was destroyed. A little detail at the end, and I think I'm not going to go further because the sun is definitely moving down quickly. And I don't want to get back late. I was thinking to go through Shakatasura and Trinavarta. Because the flow is so nice. Anyway, when Nanda Maharaj had Krishna in his arms, he asked Krishna, please describe what happened. Mother Jasoda. Guess it couldn't have been 3-4 days, because how could Krishna speak 3-4 days? Anyway, Mother Jasoda. Nah. That's with the Damodar Leela. The Damodar Leela. After the Damodar Leela, this happened. So I won't go there. So, Krishna was safe. The first demon had been killed. And some time later, there was another festival. The Shakatasura demon situation. Because Krishna was placed underneath a cart. Krishna's legs kicked the cart. And the parts of the cart and all the heavy utensils went flying in all directions. And again, Shakatasura was killed by the weight of the cart crushing upon him. And again, Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj asked the children, what happened? What happened? And they said, Krishna raised his legs and kicked the cart. And the cart went flying, and this man came out of the cart and got crushed by the cart. Yeah, right. Krishna killed the Shakatasura demon. And then the Trinavarta demon. One by one, demons were sent to Gokul to kill Krishna. In the Leela with Trinavarta, Mother Jasoda had Krishna on her lap. She was breastfeeding Krishna. But suddenly Krishna became very heavy. So heavy that she couldn't bear the weight of little child in her arms and in her lap. So she put Krishna down. She couldn't lift him anymore because he exhibited one of his siddhis becoming heavier than the heaviest, which to use later also as Trinavarta was taking Krishna for a ride. Woo! This is great fun. Krishna was having a joy ride. But he got heavier and heavier and heavier. So like Putana was trying to get off of me. Trinavarta with all of his might. Get off of me. But little child was holding around his neck. He couldn't get the little child's arms off of his neck. And he was getting heavier and heavier and heavier. Finally, so heavy, he went crashing to the ground, hit a stone slab, and finished. End of Trinavarta. So here in Gokul, one by one, with another time some more detail, but Krishna exhibited his divinity. And he was protecting, as his purpose in appearing in this world was for, to give protection to Mother Earth, to relieve Mother Earth from the burden of these demoniac personalities with such atheistic disposition and vicious way of using it. Krishna relieved the burden of the earth and enjoyed full pastimes with his devotees here in Gokul Mahavan. So this is such a nice setting, isn't it? The significance of this place, Chitta Haran Ghat. It's the place where Mother Jasoda came after looking inside Krishna's mouth and seeing what she saw inside Krishna's mouth. So she came here to offer prayers to Lord Shiva to take away that disturbed state of consciousness. Seeing the panorama of the river Jamuna. Such a nice setting. We're very fortunate that the residents here allow us to come and take up their space and have prasadam and have kirtan. So, but it's especially because it's such a nice place, we came here. Again, we won't be coming to Gokul Mahavan again. So, as the rest of the day completes and we prepare ourselves for going to Varsana and Unchagaon tomorrow, remember, carry with you the beautiful scenery, the forest in which Krishna and as a small boy lived and performed wonderful pastimes. Actually, I think Dinabandhu is going to bring us on this side one more time. Yes. One more time we're going to be on this side of the river Jamuna. So, you'll have his association for that experience. The Dinabandhu experience is something very special. Don't miss it. Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai.